Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm Bill Bartholomew. Always a pleasure to spend some time with you. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, and of course, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WPRO. All right, today a conversation that is kind of a long time coming here on B-Town. Look, throughout the course of the pandemic, we learned a lot, and we've been through a tremendous amount of challenges. That's as obvious as the sky is blue, and the moon will probably be out many nights this month. But the specific issue surrounding visitation to nursing homes and other congregate care facilities, I mean, that's something that there have just been so many horrible, sad stories that have emerged from that where, you know, elderly folks unable to see or have any kind of human contact with a member of their family and passing away in isolation and, you know, just the mental health taxation that has put obviously on those individuals, but also anyone who's close to those individuals, whether it be it family or friends, whatever the case is. So this is kind of like an obvious thing that it was a challenge. But Charlie Galligan is an advocate for the Essential Caregivers Movement, and he went through an experience with his parents being in a congregate care facility and being unable to access them and provide that essential care that while there are CNAs and other professionals that have certainly been able to do what they can, sometimes it really is the family member that is able to provide the most practical and appropriate care to somebody in a healthcare facility of any sort, or at least be a part of that team, right? So now we're in a moment where we've learned so much from the pandemic. We've learned so much about our public health infrastructure, where there are shortcomings, where there are strengths, what we can do from a personal protection standpoint, you know, obviously with masking and vaccines and testing and everything surrounding that. But there are still gaps. And one of them is, and how do we manage this essential caregiver and congregate care visitation scenario, which is quite frankly still playing out. So that's our conversation today. Charlie Galligan, somebody who has been on the forefront of this right here on the Bartholomew Town Podcast. Okay, welcome into Bartholomew Town. My guest is Charlie Galligan. And today we're talking about something that is, look, I mean, this is something that impacts just about everybody in one way, shape, or form. And we saw such an incredible, incredibly sad and concerning moment during the pandemic. And let me let you, Charlie, explain exactly what it is you're advocating for and the work that you do and how you came into this space here.
Yes, completely by accident. So my name is Charlie Galligan. So for the past 10 years, I've been deeply immersed in the care of my parents. My mother suffered a terrible fall, which she was in a coma, and then it led to a traumatic brain injury. And through the years of caring for her, my father, his world, of course, collapsed when my mother, my former mother, went away, and she's been replaced by this a lovable, adorable, but shell of her former self. So my father sadly slipped into Alzheimer's, and my wife and I were caring for him here. He was living with us at our house. My mother was in a nursing home just around the corner. We're in Bristol. And like everybody else, when COVID hit, nobody knew what the heck was going on worldwide. So we were happy to stay out of the nursing home for a couple months while everybody tried to figure out what was going on and take necessary precautions. But after a few months, when the former governor, Raimondo, enacted a plan to open up businesses, including casinos and strip clubs, that was about the time that I started advocating for like a humane resumption of some type of safe nursing home visitation, because in my parents' case, neither understood why they were separated. I was a daily visitor of my mom, and I was just there nearing the end of life, and I just wanted to give them each the ability to be together.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, the casinos specifically. I mean, when we went into that so-called pause back in November of 2020, and they kept the casinos open, that was for me the moment where it was like, hold on a second here. This is going to be an all or nothing type of situation. Otherwise, you're not going to sell it. You're not going to get the right buy-in. And people are going to start to question things like nursing home visitation in particular, inability to conduct, you know, funerals, so on and so forth. I mean, this is where it went off the rails for a lot of folks. And what did you learn during those first few months of the pandemic? And how did that inform kind of how, when things were able to reopen or seemed like they should be able to reopen, how you would approach nursing home visitation?
Well, I mean, what did I learn? I mean, it was just, I was smacked in the face with the fact that my daily care, you know, we're more than visitors. Like, the laws that we're advocating for are called essential caregiver laws. And, you know, we're more than visitors. We go in and we contribute to the daily care of our loved ones in the facilities. But the state of Rhode Island doesn't make any, they don't make any money off tax revenue, right? Of me being there, cutting my mom's fingernails or doing, you know, all of the jobs that I do with her to supplement the care of the wonderful CNAs and nurses. And I can't say enough about the staff. You know, my wife and I have been big fans of CNAs, nurses, and all the supporting staff for years before the pandemic. We didn't need this crisis to suddenly be aware of all that those women and men do. But so, you know, my care supplements them, but it wasn't, it just wasn't on the radar screen of the politicians. So it was incumbent upon family caregivers to bring it to the attention of the politicians and the nursing home industry, and some in the nursing home industry. My parents happen to be in a great facility now in Warren, Grace Barker Health, and they're very cooperative, and they work with families towards, you know, to make things better for the residents. But there are sadly some unscrupulous nursing home owners and CEOs who were, after a few months and there was a nationwide crisis of staffing, they were more than happy to keep families out of there as long as possible so that families weren't seeing what was going on. And that is just a wholly unethical reason to keep families out.
And that was on the grounds of COVID-19, or was that, you know, how did that happen, and what was the justification for it?
Sure, 2 years ago, you know, we're over 2 years now. So sure, yeah, we all understood it. But, you know, as the months went on and, well, first of all, you know, it took them, I used to, you know, somewhat joke that it took our country like 8 or 9 months to research and develop the vaccines and get them all distributed. And since then, we've all been, when I say we all, that is staffs at nursing homes and visitors to nursing homes, we've all been vaccinated and boosted. But yet, you know, still access wasn't granted. And while I'm in good shape, and we had to move my father from our home into the nursing home. And we changed nursing homes largely because of this. So we're in good shape now, but there's, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of residents across the country and families that are still. I got a story 2 days ago from, I think it was Illinois or someplace. I'm in touch with advocates and families all across the country. So, but I believe it was Illinois where there was another lockdown put in place just now because there was a few cases of scabies.
Wow.
And that's why we're trying to push these laws, you know, to act as a guardrail against those nursing homeowners that would just, they're too trigger happy to kick families out. And I think it's, you know, when I've lamented in the press that, you know, facilities could keep people out for 3 or 4 months every year when there's a flu outbreak, I think it's conspicuous that nobody in the industry ever rebutted that or told me I was crazy. And now we see that does in fact happen. So, as the pandemic eases, a lot of politicians have, you know, given dutiful lip service to the horrors of isolation, but they haven't taken the steps they need to take to prevent this from happening again. And that's why we're urging our federal delegation here in Rhode Island to hop on board with, you know, those others across the country who are supporting our federal bill, the Essential Caregiver Law, which is H.R. 3733.
And so let's talk about the bill. What does it contain? Is it basically parameters for which, you know, close family or whoever is defined as an essential caregiver is able to access a nursing home or other congregate care facility in the event that there's any kind of medical outbreak? Is that essentially what it is about?
Yeah. Yes. And it's, you know, it's fairly straightforward. It's not a big complicated bill. You can look it up online, 3733, and it just, I think it provides, you know, any resident to designate or their, you know, their designee to name two individuals as essential caregivers. And I think they would be granted access during a 12-hour window each day. We're not so extreme as to say just throw open the doors of every facility during future medical emergencies. But, you know, there were previously federally guaranteed rights for all nursing home and assisted living residents across the country to have full access to visitors. And one of the groups I work with is called Caregivers for Compromise, and it's a well-named group because, you know, we're happy to compromise with the industry execs and anybody else with a stake in this game. Just, you know, we're just looking for some humanity, nothing outlandish. We just, you know, I saw the effects of isolation from these people, those who died, you know, over Zoom. Their daughters and sons were trying to say goodbye to them over Zoom. You know, Alzheimer's patients, they don't do great with FaceTime and Zoom. And, mm-hmm. you know, the industry tried to tout window visits, which is basically walking around the back of your mom's facility and knocking on the, it's horrible. It's horrible. My group, we put out a group called, we put out a book called Protecting Them to Death, the impact of isolation in long-term care. And you can look it up. And we collected stories of isolation in facilities from all 50 states. And it's heartbreaking. We've sent it to all U.S. reps, all U.S. senators, including our four. I've communicated with their offices, but as of yet, none of the four have jumped on. And at this point, it's pretty disgraceful.
Support for Bartholomew Town comes from Commonwealth Care Alliance Rhode Island, delivering uncommon care to Rhode Island. PVD Fest, presented by First Works, coming to Providence this June, and by Pure Vita Labs. Visit purevitalabs.com.
Now back to B-Town.
Yeah, there's the obvious thing, which is that, hey, look, you know, the pandemic hit and everyone was out of sorts and had no idea where we were going or how we could take precautions and so on and so forth. But, you know, at this point in time, we understand personal protective equipment. We have the vaccine, we have the booster, we have testing, we have all of these mechanics. So at what point does, you know, you hate to say it this way, but at what point do we move on where you know, again, it's not just, you know, anti-vax maniac world, but where obviously the most vulnerable in that category, that includes people who are in congregate care facilities oftentimes, but there are ways to protect both the patient or the person in the facility, the staff, and the family. What do you think it is that is the disconnect on this?
So that's a great question. It's an obvious question. It's one that I've asked many times. I'll try and spare you the more cynical side of myself, but, you know, we do hear, first of all, there's no money needed for this bill, right? So a lot of times they, you know, politicians don't want to write checks for this, that, or the other thing, but, you know, it costs no money to allow the sons and daughters and wives and sisters and brothers to go in to supplement the care of the CNAs. So, you know, in my day job, I work as a criminal defense private investigator, and I will tell you that I was, you know, I visited prisons during lockdown, and those visits there was common sense. You know, they were guided by common sense at the prisons, and they were much more effective and safe, and allowed me to do my job than when I would try to go see my mother at the facility. So I don't know. I mean, there have been rumblings that, you know, another group I work with called the Essential Caregiver Movement, which consists of a bunch of bright caregivers from across the country. We you know, we got a sponsor, a U.S. rep to sponsor the bill. We all went down to the steps of the Capitol. We introduced the bill to much fanfare. In the ensuing, that was about a year ago, in the ensuing year, some of the reluctance, there are rumblings that it's because, I'll try and be gentle in my language, but some of the Democratic U.S. congressmen, they're not eager to, they're not a fan of the sponsor. We took whatever sponsor we could get. Mm-hmm. She happens to be, I guess she has some pro-Donald Trump stuff on her website or Facebook. This is not, you know, my realm. And for that, I think some Democrats are hesitant to work with her. Now, we've pestered. So most of our sponsors are Republicans. We've gotten a lot of Democrats, though, now. We've asked them to grow up and be adults and not be middle schoolers. And in fact, I have advocacy colleagues in Connecticut just next door. And now all five of those U.S. reps have signed on. Mm-hmm. And I believe they might all be Democrats. So I'm confused as to why I'm still hitting a brick wall here in Rhode Island. But, you know, one of my advocacy friends, she points out that, you know, you wouldn't deprive a blind person of their seeing eye dog. You wouldn't deprive a deaf person of their hearing aid or a non-ambulatory person of their cane. And in the case of my mother and father, you know, they cannot express themselves any longer. And I understand their distorted language at this point. And I am their voice. I know what their needs are. And I can relay that to the staff. And why we're depriving these people of access to their loved ones in their dying years is just beyond me. It's inexcusable at this point.
Yeah, last couple of minutes here, I wonder about on the state level, what about Governor McKee and other leaders here within the state? Is there any movement even inside the General Assembly on this matter?
Yeah, they've been great. And I will say, you know, if anybody thinks I'm just trashing politicians, I will say I had a much better experience with our state reps and state senators. And my state rep, June Speakman, I worked mm-hmm. with her, and she put forth a bill, and we didn't, despite our lopsided Democratic General Assembly, they didn't focus on Democrat or Republican. They were all decent. We got the bill passed unanimously last June, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. But when you ask about Governor McKee, I'm sorry to report. I approached him at one point and asked him to sign the bill, and he said that he didn't know if it had passed. I informed him that it had unanimously. He told me he would sign it, and he never signed it. So it ultimately passed without his signature. But that was a disappointment to those of us families with loved ones in a facility. And although that bill passed unanimously almost a year ago, I've been attending hearings with the Department of Health. I've testified as they attempt to develop language that will govern the bills. But nearly a year later, that language hasn't been codified. And, you know, there were some outs there when I was looking at the language that said, you know, you must allow essential caregivers in except for any mitigating factors. And when I objected to that language, because it was vague and any, you know, CEO of a nursing home could keep anybody out for whatever a mitigating factor is, I objected to that. I waited a few months for another hearing. And they changed that language to you could keep an essential caregiver out for any necessary circumstances. I again objected to that, and it's been another 5 months or something, and I haven't heard. I've asked the Department of Health to, you know, to keep me updated about the language so that we can enact this state bill. But so we have, and there are, you know, I could tell you 49 other stories about this from fellow advocates across the country, and it's just not up to snuff, and that's why we need a federal bill. And you know, when we were all, you know, telling horrible stories of isolation, I've read in recent months that the government and different entities have now conducted studies to say that, yes, in fact, isolation in nursing homes was bad for Alzheimer's residents and other disabled people. And I don't know how much money those geniuses spent on those studies. But, you know, I didn't need a study. Anybody with common sense didn't need a study to say that. And I'll just say, Bill, that, you know, while COVID eases and it's just not as deadly anymore in May of 2022 as it was in March of 2020, isolation still is, and it always will be. It's not good for young able-bodied people, and it's particularly horrendous for those who cannot speak for themselves, who cannot walk, who cannot think clearly, who cannot speak. And you know, we've got to protect that population. And so we really urge our two reps, Cicilline and Langevin here in Rhode Island, to support H.R. 3733. And we are looking for a Senate companion bill. And we would love Senator Reid or White House to make this a priority.
Well, I know you've been a persistent advocate throughout the last several years on this, and I'm glad we were able to connect on this. Let's stay in touch as this continues to develop. And I'm interested to see both statewide and federally where this goes and how it contributes to a sort of reshaping of public policy around crises of this sort, where you know it's a difficult balance. And I think it's tough to hold anybody's feet to the fire when you're talking about the very beginning of COVID-19. You know, everything seemed like, all right, we just got to figure out how to navigate this. But at this point, it does seem like we've learned a lot of significant lessons. And one of them is that we have tools to, in addition to common sense, to, you know, allow for something like essential caregivers who are family members to visit and care for their loved ones inside nursing homes. I mean, that seems like we're there. You know, we have to, that's the ingenuity. That's what everyone's been working towards. And why not embrace that? So I'm with you all the way on this.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Bill. And yeah, we've had 2 years to learn about this. There's really no excuse to be dragging our heels. And we have to protect this population. We've had 2 years to learn. It's not really that complicated. It costs no money. But we can't just completely view COVID in the rearview mirror and say, oh, we don't need to, you know, enact these laws anymore because we're past COVID. Well, it's, as I say, it's happening still today. It could happen for flu, norovirus, scabies, or, you know, a grudge. A nursing home administrator could keep a son or daughter out for a grudge, you know, if they were to speak out too much in the press and irritate the wrong people. So we really need to get some protections against that. And I really appreciate the opportunity to get the word out for our cause. So thank you very much.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.